I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Intercooler Podcast with me, Dan Prosser, Andrew Frankel, my co-host, sitting opposite me. Episode 207, magazine style, this one. Lots to get through. And actually, we're starting with a little bit about us, about our app and website. Now, for those who don't know, and I'm sure there are people out there, our app and website, it's our online car magazine.
Yes.
It's a new kind of car magazine, isn't it? We publish news stories by what we think is the best team of automotive writers. What we know is the best team of automotive writers
in
the world.
And it's not something we say lightly. It's not some kind of like flip phrase. It really is. And I've been in this business long enough to know there is no other organisation that has a stable of writers. I think, you know, frankly, they come close to the amazing bunch of people that we have writing new stories for us every single day of the working week.
Yeah. So we publish this stuff without adverts. We're very proud of the stories that we publish, and we've won a few awards. So we must be doing something right. And a few weeks ago, we upgraded our app with a bespoke, custom-built, shiny, beautiful new app. And lots of people are using it now, and it seems to be working very well. If, by the way, you're an early app subscriber and you've not logged onto the app, just go to the settings page of the new app. Download the new app, go to the settings page, and use the second option. It works seamlessly. It's really good. If anyone has any issues, just get in touch with us, and we're ready and waiting to help. But what we're talking about this morning is the second of two big infrastructure upgrades that we're making. This one, which happens tomorrow, so on Tuesday this week, Tuesday the 16th of April, we're making a big upgrade to our membership system, our payments platform. Now, this allows us to do some very clever things. For new subscribers, people who are coming to us afresh, they can sign up literally in seconds using Apple Pay and Google Pay.
Yeah.
Really good upgrade. But for existing subscribers, there are other benefits. For instance, they'll be able to switch very easily from a monthly subscription to an annual or the other way around.
Yeah.
And in time, we can introduce some very clever things like a referral scheme where you can refer a friend and save some money on your own subscription. So it's a really good, really worthwhile, robust upgrade. And it's very, very simple as well for existing app and website users. You will notice after Tuesday afternoon, the first time you go to log in, you will be asked to enter your email address. Now, that should be the email address that you have registered with us. That will then send you an email, and you simply click on the link there and log in again, and away you go. That's all you have to do. Or you can go to your email and enter the little code that you'll be given. Enter that code on the app and website, and you'll be good to go. Yep. So it's very, very straightforward. And
either way works equally well.
Yeah, exactly. It will take seconds, and then away you go. And it's going to make a big difference, we think, to the rate at which people sign up. It's going to be better for existing users. So with our new app, fully integrated new app, with our new payment system, we're going to be leaps and bounds ahead of where we were a couple of months ago.
And just going back to anybody who's still sitting there wondering what on earth it is we're talking about, do go and check us out. I mean, one of the things that we're most proud of is that, you know, it's not only the stories that we publish every day, but they then live on the app and on the website forever. Mm. So if you buy a, you know, a paper magazine, and we love paper magazines, but you only get the stories that are in them, subscribe to our websites, and we've already got well over 1,000 stories up there, written by some of the greatest journalists, and not just journalists, but engineers and designers and drivers. And they're all there. There's over 1 million words up there already. So if you're just sitting there thinking, what on earth are these guys talking about, just go to the-intercooler.com and you'll see.
Mm. And actually, you can start a 30-day free trial and see what it's all about without spending a penny with us.
Absolutely. End of promo?
End of promo, although, I mean, we're going to talk now about one of our biggest stories that we've ever done. We sort of pushed the boat out a bit, didn't we?
We did.
Ferrari 296 GTB versus McLaren 750S test.
Yeah.
And that went live last week.
Yeah.
So that's on there. Yeah. If you're a subscriber or you're not yet, you can go and read it right away. We were up in North Wales for 2 days.
We got to spend 2 days in Snowdonia.
Yeah.
In two of the greatest supercars of the modern era.
Mm.
I wonder how sorry people are feeling for us right now.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, hearts bleed. We had Dean Smith up there, fantastic photographer. The photos are amazing. But, I mean, you're right. These are one of these cars is the best £250,000 supercar on sale today, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually, I would say one of the greatest supercar. And again, I don't want to labour the point, but I've been doing this for a bit. And I always look at cars and how good they are at the job they're designed to do. And one of those cars is as good at that as pretty much anything else I've driven in that kind of car in 35 odd years doing this job.
Mm.
And the other isn't far behind.
We're not going to give it away, are we?
No,
we're not going to give it away.
You need to go and have a look on the website.
That's just not good business.
Yeah.
But we could talk about the cars a little bit. So the 750S is clearly an evolution of the 720S.
Yeah.
This might just be me talking, but they've sort of fiddled with the styling a little bit, particularly around the eye sockets.
Yeah, it's not as good looking a car, is it?
It's not, is it?
No.
So that's a pity, but they've made it a more aggressive, more hardcore, more focused kind of machine, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, everybody else would think, well, it's, you know, a midlife update or whatever, change the name maybe and tweak this, tweak that. I mean, McLaren have been through the entire car. There's not an area of the car, apart from possibly the brakes. They maybe carry over, but for everything else from the steering and the gearbox and the engine and the suspension and the body and the whole lot, all change. And yeah, I mean, you said to me when you first drove it that it felt to you more like a 765 LT than an upgrade 720S. And you're absolutely right. For good or for ill, this is a car that is so much more dynamic, aggressive, in your face. I mean, it's a thrilling, thrilling device. Mm. It's massively hardcore. I couldn't understand when they first told me about it why they weren't going to do an LT version. Mm. You drive it and you understand exactly why they're not going to do an LT version, because it's kind of already there.
It is.
Yeah.
I think if McLaren, you know, a couple of years ago, they didn't do the 765 LT, they did the 750 LT, and it was just this car with an LT badge.
We'd have been very happy.
We'd have gone, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would have said they haven't gone far enough, it's not fast enough, it's whatever
not
else.
Fast enough. I mean, people who know about this said, you know, but which car's quicker point to point?
Mm.
And it's an impossible question to answer, because, well, you can answer it, because the answer is whichever car leaves first. Mm-hmm. These cars, and the McLaren was quicker than the Ferrari, but it's an irrelevance, because even the Ferrari is so much faster than you can drive it safely on a public road with any consideration at all to your fellow road user, that the fact that one car may be, you know, a tenth or two tenths or whatever faster, it is an irrelevance. Both these cars are so much faster, frankly. They have performance. They have a huge swathes of performance. You basically, unless you're on a racetrack, you cannot use, even on the wide-open, bone-dry drives of roads of Snowdonia that we were on.
Mm. It's true, isn't it? And so, certainly for me, the fact that you can't tap into all of the performance that these cars have, for me it means that I look for other things. Yeah. I look for something that I can enjoy about these cars when I'm not driving like a total lunatic.
Yeah.
Maybe even something about the appearance, maybe something about the driving environment. And for me, the Ferrari is actually is a prettier car than the McLaren. Particularly, we had a dark... Was it blue Pozzi?
Pozzi blue, yeah. Yeah. So one of the very few colours that Ferrari will sell you without charging you extra money
for it. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a standard colour.
So it's a dark blue, isn't it?
It's a dark blue, and some lights, beautiful.
In some lights, it almost looks black.
Yeah.
But just a very understated, very elegant, stylish looking supercar.
Which compared to the last one we had, which was Ferrari's press car, which was sort of done in 1960s Marinella concessionaires colours. So it was like sort of bright red and bright blue
together. Blue wheels.
With blue wheels. Yeah. I mean, it was about as in your face as, I mean, a car could ever be. And this dark blue one, it just sort of, it was so elegant. And it was kind of, you know, next to the McLaren, which was Helios orange.
Yes.
£8,200 from MSO.
Wow.
That's just the paint. It is a better looking car anyway, but particularly in the colours that they turned up in. There's a colourblind bloke telling you all this. I don't know why you're giving me a moment's attention. I don't actually know what on earth it is I'm talking about.
Well, you haven't said anything wrong so far. I say it in the... So we've got the video coming up. That's going to be live later this week, actually, on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. Just search the Intercooler. And I say in the video just how fantastic it is, even now, to be on the side of a mountain in North Wales with some amazing roads around us, comparing a Ferrari supercar to a McLaren supercar.
Yeah.
And they've got unbelievable amounts of power. What's the Ferrari? 819 brake horsepower?
Yeah, and the McLaren 740, because it's the 750 expresses the power output in PS.
Yes.
Further starker.
Yes.
Which is, so 740 British brake horsepower.
And it's just fantastic that we still get to do this, and long may it continue.
Yeah.
Should we? It's been said before, it's not an original thought, but McLaren has come from, certainly McLaren Automotive, from a standing start within, what are we talking?
12 years?
12, 13 years or something. Yeah. And producing stuff consistently that is absolutely competitive with the best in the world.
Mm. Yeah, and it is, and if you go and read the story, it is one of the points that I make, that when I was young, there was no McLaren Automotive, and the comparison was always Lamborghini and Ferrari.
Yeah.
It would be a Countach versus a Testarossa or 512 TR, or it'll be a Diablo versus a 512 TR or whatever. And now McLaren have moved into that space as the most credible opposition to the benchmark car, which then and now... always was and always has been a Ferrari. And if you look at a car like the 750S and you take the finest Ferrari that they've produced of the modern era, and at the end of it, you and I, us 2 days driving those cars, you and I are still kind of scratching our heads trying to work out which one we prefer. It is a testament to the extraordinary job that McLaren have done, you know, just establishing that brand at that level with that amount of credibility.
Mm. It's amazing. It's amazing. They've got great people there, great designers, great engineers, and they produce phenomenal cars. I mean, you're living with one still, aren't you?
Yeah, we've got an Artura knocking about.
Artura.
Yeah. I mean, also, just going back to something you were saying earlier about, you know, when we were talking about the level of performance that you can't actually use and all that, and what you look for. What I look for is there are so many aspects of a car's dynamics that can be enjoyed without driving like your hair's on fire. And, you know, for instance, I am quite obsessive, I suppose, about steering. And if you go and drive the McLaren, which has very progressive, very linear, quite low geared steering, and it feels so natural, I can enjoy that, frankly, sitting at 30, 40 miles an hour in heavy traffic. That is a way. And to me, that speaks to the quality of the car underneath. And the way it tells me the way the engineers are thinking about it and the way that they're thinking of the sort of people who want to drive it. And maybe it makes me think that they are kind of thinking of me a bit. You get in the Ferrari and you've got this overly assisted steering with this quite aggressive off-center reaction, and there's nothing like as much feel. And at first, at least to me, and you may completely disagree with this, it puts a barrier between me and the car. I get in the car, it doesn't feel natural. And with cars like that are so fast, you know, you and I have said many times before, the actual most important thing that those cars can do for their drivers is to give them confidence. Because if you're not confident in the car, and I've said this about, you know, things like Aventadors, which you can't see out of,
yeah.
doesn't matter how well they handle, how fast they are, or whatever. You know, if you're not confident in the car and placing it, you're just not going to be able to enjoy it the way that otherwise you might. And because McLaren get that, because they make their cars, you know, they have goldfish bowl visibility. Mm. They have this wonderful steering. They're the kind of car that you can get into and drive quite quickly and start to enjoy very soon. And the Ferrari at first gets in the way of that. And the extraordinary thing about the 296 GTB is that somehow it finds a way around it.
Yeah.
And after you've got used to it, which you do have to do in a way you don't in the McLaren, you can go and enjoy it. And you do come back thinking this car feels completely different to the way it did when I got in it. And in fact, the car hasn't changed. It's you.
I love the way the McLaren steers because it just feels natural.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just so attuned to modern EPAS systems with that, I call it an over-caffeinated sort of yeah. response around the straight ahead.
Yeah.
I can just tune into it. Yeah. When it's very, very good, and I'm talking Porsche 911 good, I'm talking Ferrari 296 GTB good,
yeah.
I actually feel I can tune into it very, very quickly.
Yeah.
It comes to me immediately, and I have that faith in and the confidence, and I can position the car, and I trust the front end.
Yeah.
I just think that car engineers have become an awful lot better at calibrating these systems than they were 10 years ago. And I just sort of have this confidence in them. Only when they're very good, though.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I've driven up, you know, I drove the McLaren up from where I live in the lower Wye Valley to North Wales, so right through the middle of Wales. In the dark, in the middle of the night, because that's why when I enjoy doing those sorts of journeys. And I got out of that into the Ferrari. And my initial, you know, that little car park we were parked in, and then you go out the car park, you turn right, and you're already on the road.
Yeah.
And I can remember just going, I'm just thinking, well, this car's already lost this comparison, because I can't think that it just felt so alien and unusual to me.
Mm.
And yeah, it was just extraordinary how quickly that situation changed, and I just dialed into it. And I think it's actually because of all the other stuff, that just how actually natural the response of the chassis are. You kind of work out how to do it very quickly. But yeah.
I understand that.
Interesting, different philosophies.
Yeah. Well, also, different philosophies when it comes to the engines, the powertrains.
Yeah.
So, as we know, the Ferrari has got a twin-turbo V6 with hybrid drive.
Yeah.
The McLaren has no hybrid drive, but a twin-turbo V8.
Yeah.
We should talk a little bit about V6 versus V8, and particularly
what the market is thinking. This is really interesting, because I'm probably a bit behind the time. I'm only just starting to log on to this.
Mm.
When it comes to those sorts of cars, the market doesn't seem to be that into downsized, down cylinder. You know,
we'll come on to Stroll in a moment, but he says this, doesn't he?
He does say exactly this, and he had some. He did a survey, but we'll come on to. Yeah, I had lunch with Lawrence Stroll. Whenever it was, depending on when you're listening to this, last week before. And we discussed this very point.
But he endorses the point that buyers actually don't want V6s in such cars. They want V8s.
Yeah.
And I understand that, because a V6, you can get phenomenal power from them, particularly with hybrid drive, as the Ferrari does.
It's got more power than the McLaren.
It has.
Yeah.
But there's something about V6 that says to me, sports car, not supercar.
Absolutely. And it's I don't think it's actually got much to do with numbers. Mm. I think it's an emotional connection, and I think that at that level, people, you know, frankly, they can afford to make the choice. They can afford to say, actually, I'm going to stay with my V8 if it's all the same to you.
Mm.
That's what I want, because I want a V8, because it's a V8.
Mm.
V6s are the kind of things that, you know, you used to get in Ford Cortinas.
Yes.
It's not a special engine configuration, whereas V8, even if it's the most sort of blue collar of V8s, it's still a Chevy small block.
Mm.
It still makes that noise. It still connects with you on that emotional level,
yeah.
on a way that, with very few exceptions, and I'm thinking about things like original Ferrari Dinos and Honda NSXs, V6s just don't. They just haven't got that ability to wire into whatever it is that makes you love those sorts of cars in the first place.
Mm. The market buyers seem to be voting with their feet.
They do.
Feet or their wallets. And I pulled out a couple of examples here. So there is a 296 GTB for sale with 300 miles on the clock.
So it's almost a new brand car. New. Yeah.
£225,000. So that's come down a fair way. But you look at the F8 Tributo, right? That's the car the 296 replaced with a V8.
Yeah.
I found a car, a 2020 car, so almost 4 years old now, with 8,000 miles on it.
Yeah. Which actually is a reasonable amount of miles for one of those.
Yeah. £210,000. So only 15 grand less than the 296, which had done 300 miles. So,
and 4 years older.
4 years older.
Yeah.
So it does seem that F8 residuals are much stronger.
It seems to me that you pay for a four-year-old F8 what you pay for a one-year-old 296 GT3. And and what I find, well, I don't find it bizarre because I do understand what's going on here. But if anybody ever went and drove a 296 GTB and felt just how bloody wonderful that powertrain is, there's nothing, in terms of what matters to you and me, there's nothing deficient about that powertrain. No. And in fact, because it's, you know, it's got some electric-only range, and because it uses the hybrid to fill in gaps in the torque curve, and because it sounds wonderful, it's, you know, I think it's one of Ferrari's best powertrains.
Mm, it is extraordinary.
Yeah, but the market doesn't want it. And, you know, the car that we used, which was a 2023 car, and it had, it had quite a few options on it. But I don't think an unusual amount. But I know that it was originally bought by whoever its first owner was for something beginning with a 3.
Mm.
The person who owns the car now got the best part of a six-figure discount on it.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
gosh.
And that's on a year-old car. Now, okay, we all know that if you go and put 80 grand's worth of options on your car, whatever the car is, you can't expect to get anything like that or even any of it back. But it is still, and it's not just Ferraris we're talking about.
No. So another good example is the Maserati MC20. So they are around £200,000 new before options.
Yes.
And you can pick up a 2021 car now for 150. So from, you know, list price, that's before options, that's 25% off. So those have come down quite a lot, those MC20s, with a V6. So I just wonder, is this a problem for manufacturers, or is it a problem for those first buyers who buy them brand new and take the hit?
Let me give you another example, and this is kind of anecdotal because I don't have any stark evidence, but not that any have been seen anywhere near the Mercedes-Benz UK press fleet, but the new C-Class, the C63, which went from having that magnificent twin-turbo 4-litre V8, is now a 2-litre four-cylinder hybrid. And anecdotally, I understand that the car is not exactly doing the numbers that they'd hoped for it, despite the fact it's got 670 horsepower or whatever it is.
Yeah.
People just want a bloody V8.
Mm. It's interesting, isn't it? Because we were always told that people just want more power. That's what they really want.
Yeah.
But actually, it sounds like there is a more sort of subjective element here. People want the soundtrack, the emotion of an exciting powertrain. It's not just about the raw numbers.
It'll be interesting to see, given that, you know, McLaren have had some issues with their residuals in the past. You know, I imagine that 750S residuals are going to be, certainly by McLaren standards, pretty damn strong. Whether the same remains, I mean, they haven't really started coming onto the market yet, but whether the same can be said of the Artura, which is a fine, fine car.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a 3-litre V6. And, you know, if the same thing happens to the Artura as appears to be happening to the 296 GTB. I mean, to me, this is an argument for just buy a 296 GTB because... Geez, if I had the money.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you would, wouldn't you?
Magnificent car.
So what do we think is going on then? Is this a sort of end of days thing? People know that they're going to be legislated out of their big bruising V8s at some point into an EV or perhaps into a downsized, hybridized thing. So they're deciding not to rush it for themselves.
I think it's partly that. I also think, and I hear this more and more the more I talk to people, is... I think people are beginning to think that whatever that day is when some legislator says you can't have your V8 anymore, it's a lot further away than they originally thought. And in the meantime, particularly at this level, you are dealing with people who have a choice. You are dealing with people for whom that is not their only car. It is their high days and holidays recreation.
Yeah.
And they want a V8. Mm. And, you know, although I can sit here and tell you till I'm blue in the face that a V6, the V6 powertrain in the 296 GTB is inherently superior in all ways that matter to me than the V8 powertrain in an F8 Tributo. One's a V8, one's a V6. And people will vote with their feet. You can't tell people like that what to do.
No.
And they will ultimately do what they want to do. And what they want to do at the moment is to hang on to their V8s.
Mm. So which other Ferraris have had V6s?
The Dino.
That's it.
That's it.
Little baby one.
Little baby. They didn't even put a Ferrari badge on it.
Not a supercar.
No, but even that engine was, you know, it was based on the Formula One engine from the late 1950s. It's a very, very blue-blooded engine.
Mm.
Yeah, but it's the only one that they've done.
Mm.
Yeah.
So the sort of provenance, the bloodline even is not there, is it?
No.
Not like a V8.
No.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. Let's just move it on quickly because we need to talk about Pistonheads annual summer service. Pistonheads annual service, it's called, in the summer, August 10th. Because
we're going to be there.
We're going to be there.
Yeah.
The intercooler will be there, both of us. I think we're going to be on stage, which is terrifying.
Great face for radio.
Frankly. but we haven't exactly decided what we're going to do yet, have we?
No.
Maybe we'll bring a guest along.
But this is happening at Bicester Heritage.
It's at Bicester Heritage, yeah. So Pistonheads had this big event last summer.
Yeah.
And it was a big success, apparently. Several thousand people
turned up, yeah.
And they've invited us along because we have a partnership with them.
Yeah.
So yes, we're going to be on stage. We need to figure out what we're going to do. But perhaps we'll bring someone along.
Yeah.
We need to discuss that between us, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
So for any of our audience who wants to come along, we're actually offering you a 10% discount. So you can use the discount code TI10 to save 10%. There's a link in the description, or actually just Google Pistonheads annual service and you'll find it quite easily. Use TI10 to save 10% and come and see us.
Yeah, come say hello.
Come say hello. Come and heckle us on stage. No, don't heckle. Say nice things. Ask good questions. But it'll be fun, I think.
Also, talking of which... Yep. So I've completely interrupted you.
Go on.
But we are going to be at the Sunday Scramble.
We are, yes.
This Sunday.
This week.
And my goodness, have we got some cars coming.
It's our third time there.
Yeah, I just pray they all turn up. They will all turn up. They will all turn up.
It's our third time there. We were quite pleased with our display first time.
Yeah.
We were extremely pleased with our display
second
time.
Well, I was stupid enough to say that we'd better it, and we actually managed to.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
But this one is
I don't think the phrase out the park is necessarily... inappropriate in these circumstances.
No, this one's going to be outrageous. It's going to be phenomenal.
Are we going to say what it is? Don't we?
No.
Although there'll be lots of people. Well, they will come on and annoy people next time because obviously because Vista Sunday Scrambles. If you've never been, go. But if you do want to go, you've got to get a ticket fast because they sell out so fast. Mm. But if you have got a ticket, come and see us. It will be worth it. And if you do come and see us, come and say hello.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we tend to spend our days chatting to you lot, and we love it. We really do.
Mm.
And, you know, a few people have come up and said, oh, well, you looked a bit busy or, you know, didn't want to disturb. Just do. Just come and talk to us. Come and talk cars to us. It's what we're there for.
Yeah. They're good fun. They're great events. Hopefully the weather's going to be good. But, yeah, the lineup of cars that we've got is quite something.
It's certainly, well, we believe, and we have reason, no, we have good reason to believe this is true, the cars that we have got, all of which are related in a very obvious way when you see them, they've never been seen together in public before.
Mm. Good tease.
Yeah.
Good tease. Let's not give anyone
away.
Not
all of them anyway.
No, but it's it should be really good. If you're going to be there, come say hello.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Lawrence Stroll.
Lawrence Stroll.
You had lunch with Lawrence Stroll last week.
As you do. Yes. Michelin-starred chef came up and served up a few noisettes of this and that. Me and Lawrence just sort of, rapped about life and cars and,
What's he like? Is he an intimidating character?
Yeah. Well, not to me, because I think he's very media savvy.
Yeah, of course.
And he comes into the room. But, in the piece I wrote about, I compared him to Marilyn Monroe, because apparently she had the ability to stop all conversation when she walked into a room. And he's the same. Mm. He's an immensely successful Canadian billionaire, and he's the executive chairman of Aston Martin, and that's why you've gone there. So, when he walks in the room, it's kind of polite to shut up. But he does exude this sort of presence. Mm. And he's very, very nice. To us, and he's very chatty. He's a very, very good interview because you can just kind of like ask him a question and just sit back. Mm. I wouldn't necessarily want to get on the wrong side of him.
I suspect that. Probably if you work for him, he must demand the highest standards.
Yeah, but that's how he,
He's a successful guy, isn't he? That's how they get that way. So what was he saying about Aston Martin? Because rewind a couple of years when he took control, basket case might be a bit strong, but Aston wasn't in good shape. I don't think it's necessarily out of the woods, is it? Because there are a lot of people out there who really scrutinise and analyse Aston's numbers, its accounts, its sales figures, and so on.
Yeah.
And there are still challenges there.
And the share price, which, as we all know, took a massive hit after the IPO, whenever that was, a few years ago. Mm. It was £4 last summer. Mm. And when I wrote the story, and I don't know whether it's changed much since then, but it was only a few days ago that I wrote it was down to about 170. Mm. Stroll says, was all on the back of, they had software issues which are not unique to Aston Martin, which basically delayed the introduction of the DB12. And so they lost a big chunk of selling time for the DB12, and the market didn't like that, and you get what you get with the share price. But the DB12 has been, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say it has been exceptionally well reviewed, generally speaking. My review of the DB12 Volante is on the app and website.
Indeed.
Now. Get that plug in there. And his point, and you can take it or leave it, is that this is the first car that really has his fingerprints all over it. And that by the end of this year, there will be the new Vantage, which we know about but haven't driven. I'm driving it next month, which is May, and I look forward to telling you all about that. There will be the replacement for the DBS, which I have seen and I know its name, but I can't tell you anything about because it's all subject to embargo. He says they will start to deliver Valhalla. There is a DBX revision coming up, which I'm not sure I can talk about because I can't remember when the embargo date is. But if you think about what you do to a DBX in a fairly sort of straightforward and simple way, maybe thinking about the DB12, what aspect of that you might choose to carry over, then you probably aren't too far off the mark. And basically his point is that this is just the start. Mm. And that, he talked about 4 years of heavy lifting to get to the point where they are now. And he says, just watch. So I think they sold about 6,800 cars last year. He thinks this year it'll be 7,200 to 7,500. It'll be well into the eights next year, and in 3 years' time, it'll be five figures. I don't know whether that's going to happen or not. But he is very confident that he will. But then again, he's very confident about everything that he says. Mm. But what I would say is that if you look at a DB11 and then you look at a DB12, if that sort of rate of change, that level of improvement can be wrought across the whole range, so they can bring it to the Vantage and to whatever the DBS replacement's going to be called, then, I think that's grounds for optimism. Mm. The other point that he makes is that basically by the end of this year, the entire Aston Martin range will have been either replaced or substantially renewed, and that nobody else will be able to say that about their model lineup. So, you know, he talks a good game. He really does.
Mm. That's his job too. It's clearly in his interest to talk that good game.
Yeah.
They've got to go off and do it now, haven't they?
Yeah.
And consistently sell those cars, sell them profitably, run the business profitably. And it hasn't that hasn't happened for a very long time. But he clearly seems pretty optimistic that they'll get there.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, if he does, you know, if he is the person, along with, let's not forget, Adrian Hallmark, former boss of Bentley, who will be joining Aston Martin in October at the latest. If they are the people who can finally put Aston Martin on a long-term, sustainable, profitable footing, they'll be doing something which nobody else has been able to achieve for the previous 110 years. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be really interesting to listen to this podcast in 20 years' time and look back and go, they were absolutely bang on, all they didn't know what they were talking about. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
Only time will tell, won't it? We will see.
Yeah. But he is a smart guy.
Yeah.
And he has done very well in other industries. He was in the fashion industry before. His record does speak for itself. I also think, and I've said this before, that in Adrian Hallmark, there really couldn't be a better person suited to doing that job than him. The two of them need to be able to get along, and they are both people who are, I don't think either of them is really lacking in confidence. And maybe that'll be brilliant. Maybe it will be, you know, Adrian is the fourth CEO to have been there in Stroll's term. So, you know, it's I don't think it's on a plate. I don't think it's a slam dunk. But I think there is all to play for. And if they get it right, it could be really exciting.
It was really interesting to read in the story that you wrote about the Formula One team.
Yeah.
The Aston Martin branded Formula One team.
Yes.
Because it has this...
Which isn't owned by Aston Martin.
No, it's not. And they have this amazing new facility, new factory up at Silverstone.
Yeah.
Looks fantastic in the pictures. I've not been there. So that's a big step forward for that team. But they have a new, their own wind tunnel coming, don't they? And it'll be the newest, whizziest wind tunnel in Formula One.
Well, according to Stroll, it's the first all-new Formula One wind tunnel in 20 years. And because of that, because of the technological evolutions, it can do things that other tunnels can't do. At the moment, I didn't know this, they have to rent the Mercedes tunnel, which is a 2004 tunnel. It's the second newest tunnel. And Mercedes being Mercedes go, fine, you can use our tunnel, but you can only use it on a Friday, a Saturday, and a Sunday.
Yeah.
And as Stroll said, you try recruiting the world's best aerodynamicists and say you're going to have to work every weekend. It's not easy.
It's funny, isn't it? Because that is, it's a very sort of pragmatic, everyday kind of challenge.
It's so important. That's why the factory is where it is. You know, that's why it's where it is. It's because, as you put it, it's in the heart of motorsport Silicon Valley. And ultimately, you can have all the money in the world and all the tech in the world, but if you can't recruit the people to make the most of it, you might as well not do it. So that's the, you know, that is the thinking behind that. I did ask him whether he was going to rent his new tunnel to Mercedes-Benz. And he said, I ain't renting it to anybody.
Really?
But it'll do things like, it'll allow the car to yaw in the tunnel. It's not a car, it's a model. It's a 60% model of a car. And as we all know, you know, the real problem with overtaking in Formula One is cars. One car can't follow another through a corner when they are yawing. And, you know, and other tunnels, as I understand it, can only model what's going on in a straight line. So that would strike me to be as being a considerable advantage. Also, when they are using the Mercedes-Benz tunnel, because time is so short, you know, let's say they're going to do 100 runs, which is each run is an aerodynamic test. They have to bang, 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 get through them because they'll just time out. Well, with their new tunnel, they can do a run and they can sit back and they can analyze it and they can make some changes and they can work out what needs to be done next. And then they can do another run. So, you know, again, this is everything that Stroll is saying. But it does kind of make sense.
It does.
And it becomes active in September of this year. It cost 150 million somethings, dollars or pounds, can't remember, but still
a
stack of money.
Yeah.
So I'm not that surprised that Alonso's re-signed until the end of 26, because I'm not saying it's going to be the place to go. The other thing is he's obviously got is the Honda engine starting in 2026. He says that Honda were going to leave. They were out. they weren't even planning on being around at the moment until Red Bull talked them into sort of staying involved while they sorted their next move out. But, you know, he says that with the engine changes that you get, with the reg changes, you know, you want someone who knows the territory, who's completely immersed in the world of building powertrains for Formula One cars. And that's why he thinks that, you know, companies like Audi, companies like Ford, who are coming in and getting involved, are going to struggle. I mean, he may be wrong, but it's, again, it's an interesting, whereas he's going to have an on. So he says, you know, he's got the factory, he's got the wind tunnel, and he's got the powertrain. And he says that everything that he's done with the Formula One team from the moment that he acquired it is in preparation for 2026.
Wow.
And he also says...
It's a long-term vision, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was also talking to him about, you know, Max and... you know, what's going to happen in 2025. And he says, you know, don't expect any big changes at all, because no one is really going to, you know, come up with an all-new car for 2025. No one's going to design a brand-new Formula One car for a single season. So people will next year pretty much be running what they've got this year, and they'll update it, and there'll be changes to this, that, and the other. But I very much got the impression that, in his mind at least, both championships in both years are already over the hills and far away and in Christian Horner's back pocket.
Wow. God, we really are waiting for 2026, aren't we?
Yeah.
But it, I mean, it's convincing. Again, time will tell, we will see.
Yeah.
But it is convincing. It does look as though that Silverstone Aston Martin branded team has what it needs.
Yeah.
To, I mean, what does he want? He doesn't want to be winning the odd race, does he?
Oh, God, no. No. He's no interest in that at all. No, he wants multiple world championships. He wants to be a Red Bull, a Mercedes, a Ferrari.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be interesting, wouldn't it, to have exactly the same conversation with Zak Brown? And would we come away thinking, oh, well, McLaren's going to win everything in 2026 because of this, that, and the other? I don't know. I mean, it is just, you know, one man's very partial view. And, you know, there is a massive element of, well, he would say that, wouldn't he? So we as journalists are left thinking, well, you know, how credible is it? How backed by the facts is it? And he has got a factory. That's a fact. He is getting the world's most sophisticated modern Formula One wind tunnel. The drivers, I don't think that, and again, I have to be a bit careful here because an awful lot we said was off the record, but my guess, and I've said this before we had lunch, so I can say it again, is I don't think he'll be firing his son anytime soon.
No.
And you can take a view on that. But Alonso, we know, is hanging around for at least the next 2.5 seasons. Can a 45-year-old or whatever he'll be, 46-year-old Fernando, really sock it to Max and Charles and George and everybody? I don't know.
That would be fascinating.
He's going to have to go off the boil at some stage, isn't he?
I think he will be 45 at the end of the 2026 season.
Okay.
Which is knocking on for a Formula One driver. But he's a phenomenal talent, isn't he?
Can I come up with my Alonso fact?
Go on.
Which I actually texted you about earlier today.
Oh, yes, you did.
Yeah. And I only found that, I only figured this out this morning. And I haven't heard anybody else mention it, but I'm sure somebody has. At the penultimate race of this season, he will do, if everything goes okay, which I hope it does, his 400th start. 400. Nobody else is anywhere near. Kimi, I think, is next, and I can't remember, 348, 349. Lewis is at 336. Now Lewis will be a bit closer by then, but 400 Formula One races.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
It is. You know, you think of someone like Jackie Stewart, who, you know, was around in Formula One from 1964 to 1973. You know, 10 seasons. He did 99 starts. 99 starts.
Amazing, isn't it?
And Fernando's going to rack up his 400th this year.
Amazing longevity. He also took a couple of years out of F1, didn't he?
He did. This may or may not be an appropriate time to mention that nobody has ever won a Grand Prix after their 300th start.
Yes.
And I've said that before.
I'm
pretty sure that's true.
Kimi, didn't he? Because he won the US Grand Prix in that Ferrari. Oh, he continued for a couple of seasons, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
So there's no way that would have been after his 300th start.
Yeah. Gosh, good fact.
And Lewis, you know, hasn't won a race since 2021. So that, and he's on 336, so that will definitely have been in his 200s.
Yeah.
I don't believe it's been done.
Do you know what? When we're talking about teams that are looking to move up the order,
yeah,
we often do this. Everyone does this. And it's very, very easy to forget that for one team to move up the order,
someone else has got to come down.
So we might as well spend as much time thinking about who's going to slip back.
Ooh. Go on.
Mercedes? Actually, no. What I hear about Mercedes is that their 2026 powertrain is looking very, very strong.
Okay. Did somebody from Mercedes tell you that?
No, this is secondhand information from an F1 journalist.
Okay.
So who knows? Nobody knows, really.
Yeah.
But the theory is that...
But nobody also... let's say Mercedes think they've got a really strong F1 powertrain. They don't know what a Ferrari powertrain is going to be like. They don't know what a Honda powertrain is going to be like. So, how you can say that or think that without knowing what it's relative to, I don't know.
So the theory is that F1 flips between powertrain regulations and aero regulations.
Yeah.
And in 2014, huge switch to powertrain.
Yeah.
And that favoured Mercedes.
Definitely.
For years.
Yeah.
2022.
Aero.
Aero with these ground effect cars.
Yeah.
Favoured Red Bull.
Yeah.
Maybe 2026. Actually, it's probably a blend of the two, isn't it?
Yeah. But they have complete, my understanding, and I hope I'm not maligning anybody here, is that they have completely cocked up the powertrain race for 2026.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're going to have cars which are derating on the straights because they simply cannot be in. Because so great a component, I think it's like 50% of the power that a 2026 powertrain is going to develop, is going to be developed through the hybrid system. It's not going to be able to do that around a lap. Mm. And my understanding is also is that there's not much they can do to change that. So the only way that they can stop that is to basically... have DRS open almost all the time, which at the same time obviously then means if everybody's got their DRS open all the time, you might as well not have DRS because it's not doing the job it's designed to do. And I know that there are any number of F1 teams out there who are just going, well, what on earth are we going to do about this? And their view is, I can't speak for all of them, but I have heard from more than one source that they think that the FIA have completely cocked this up. And so what I think people find difficult, certainly curious, is, and I don't think that this is replicated in many other sports, is that the overseeing body, the body that's really designed there to police it, to make sure that the regulations are obeyed, enforced, observed in a correct way, they're the people who are also making the regulations.
Mm.
So, it's... It's difficult, isn't it? I think the view is because the people they're doing it are not, people who have been with race teams for decades. That they should have seen this ball coming a lot sooner than they did, and they've now got themselves into a situation where manufacturers have committed to making a certain kind of engine, which just isn't going to be able to do the job that they need it to do.
Mm. There are lots of people saying that it's F1 and the FIA are taking it absolutely in the wrong direction because trying to have this relevancy to the road with your power unit, which is what this hybrid stuff is all about, really.
Yeah, but it's all about the manufacturers, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if you don't do that, I don't imagine that Mercedes-Benz would hang around in the sport. Mm. If you said, which is what we would all love, and Corinne talks about this a lot, if you had a beautiful 3-litre V10 running on sustainable fuel, revving to 20,000 RPM. We'd all be terribly happy. I suspect Mercedes-Benz would run a mile. Possibly Renault too. So the question is, does that matter?
Would
Ferrari hang around? If it believes its future really is hybrid-based, is that not what it should be, And so it's a question of priorities. Mm. Who do you care about? Do you care about the teams on your grid, or do you care about the audience watching, or do you take the view that, if you lost a few manufacturers, there'll be an entire queue of other race teams who would be more than happy to take their place? I subscribe to the latter view.
Mm.
To me, it's all about the spectacle. It's all about the sport. And if you had wonderful sounding, naturally aspirated V10 engines running on sustainable fuels, I think that is a perfectly legitimate and credible way for something calling itself Formula One to conduct itself. But there'll be any number of people in Formula One who go, that's ridiculous.
Mm.
It just bears no relevance to the modern world at all.
The problem for me is that we risk handing too much power to the manufacturers, and their interests are their own.
Yeah.
You know, they're not too concerned about what the fans want, really, because they're there. It's a marketing exercise for them.
If they were concerned about what the fans want, they'd never have had hybrid engines in the first place. Nobody, there's not a single Formula One fan who ever turned around and went, do you know what? I think what would really make this sport better would be to abandon those 2.4 litre V8 engines that rev to a gazillion and replace them with dull-sounding V6 hybrids, which you can barely hear. Nobody, it's not a conversation anybody's ever had.
Martin Brundle says it's the biggest mistake Formula One has ever made.
Wow.
He says that. He said it a few times.
And what better authority?
Yeah, than him.
You know, he hasn't got any axe to grind with anyone in any particular direction.
No.
He's been there forever on both sides of the fence, both as a driver and as an observer. And, you know, we know what an incredibly intelligent man he is. Mm. I'd take his point of view over most, to be honest.
I think so. Oh, gosh. Okay. So there's a lot to learn about F1 2026, isn't there? And also Aston Martin, the race team, the road car side. But as we've said a few times, we just have to wait and see, don't we? Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening or for watching. Please just remember to subscribe. So if you're watching this on YouTube, just subscribe to the channel. If you are listening to this on a podcast app, just hit the little follow button or the subscribe button. It means you don't miss an episode, and it really helps us out as well. So do that. And in return, we'll be back here next week.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.